This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast, sort of. There might be an echo in here. We have no idea. We are in the middle of moving into a new Hockey News office. It's Matt Larkin here. I've got Ken Campbell. Bada bing, bada boom. There's
sorry,
the Coke can.
Here we go.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. We got Ryan Kennedy, and we also have our new digital content producer, Stephen Ellis, who's in the room listening. I'm looking into his eyes right now. His arms are folded. He's auditing this podcast. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you.
Stephen, I think you're supposed to pick up my dry cleaning at 3:30, okay?
Stephen just gave Ken the finger, so he's in veteran form already.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm hoping this is the last time, everybody, that I have to apologize for the sound quality. I feel like I do it every week, and we're in a different place every week. We were at Ken's kitchen table last time, and right now we're in a room surrounded by boxes. I'm literally sitting on a Rubbermaid container, and so is Ken, and Ryan's sitting on a box of some sort.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're just making do with what we've got.
We're going old school, man.
Old school. Right. But this might be the last time. In a perfect world, we physically have all the good new podcast equipment, so it's going to be assembled.
Matt just doesn't know how to use it
yet. Yeah, I'm just going to learn. Or Steven. That's what Steven's for. Yeah. Somebody's going to use it and make it work, and then we're going to sound awesome. But maybe not this time. But don't worry about it, okay? To make it
content.
Up.
Content. Content. Yes. It's all about content.
It's all about the content. Content is king, as they said in SEO seminars from 2008. We're going to do a special edition of the podcast this week. It's an all-mailbag edition. I'm pretty excited about it, especially because... And I haven't even told Ken and Ryan this, but we've been getting extra mailbag questions via email, and I always forget about them, and I just keep over and over forgetting about these poor people that have good questions, so we're going to honor a couple of those to start. The first one is from Aku Lindbergh, and Aku, I have to make a confession. I'm a huge Survivor fan, diehard fan of the series, never missed an episode in my life, hope to be on the show someday, maybe even take Jeff Probst's job someday, okay? So I love this question.
Just a sec. You said you're a diehard Survivor fan?
Yes, and not the band.
I'm one of the few surviving diehard fans. Thank you.
Although, I mean, everyone loves Die Hard. Come on. So the question from Aku is, the Finnish version of the TV show Survivor just started again and got me thinking, which three players would you pick to be as your tribe members and why? So as the Survivor fan, I'm going to take this question first. I really like my picks, okay? So pick one, Pique Subban. Pique Subban is going to be on my tribe for morale. He's creative. He's always up to something fun, so I'm never going to go crazy on the island because Pique is always going to think of something fun to do. That's the reason why I pick him. Maybe the most important pick is Dustin Byfuglien because his biggest hobby is fishing. He's an obsessive fisherman, so we're always going to have food because Dustin Byfuglien's going to go out and catch it. He's going to make some fishing rod. He's amazing at fishing. He catches giant fish.
And if there's no food, he'll just eat you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not? Exactly. It'll be over quick. And the last pick is my sleeper pick, okay? Zach Hyman of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He brings his hard hat to every game, so he's going to be hardworking, you know, collecting firewood and stuff, but that's not the main reason. If we get lonely at night, Zach Hyman is a children's author. He will tell us stories by the fire to keep us sane and keep our hopes up. So that's my Survivor trio.
It's true.
Good.
Who you guys
next?
Got?
My next? Okay. Yeah. Okay, my first is the late Ted Lindsay.
Ooh.
Yeah, he would definitely be in my tribe because a lot of people who are listening probably don't know this, but... Ted Lindsay, pound for pound, might have been the toughest player in NHL history. Mm-hmm. Played the game at like 5'8", 160 pounds, and could give and take it with the best of them in the original six era when men were men and it was a tough league to play in.
You're allowed to swing your sticks in each other's heads.
Oh yeah. And he did it with the best of them. My second one would be David Backes for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's really smart. He's like an engineer, and he can fly a plane. So if we need to vacate, he could probably build us a plane and get us out of there. And I don't watch Survivor, but I guess a big part of it is these kind of backdoor negotiations that go on between.
Yes.
And to me, anybody, you know, if David Backes can negotiate a 5-year, $30 million deal at the stage of the career he was at, I want him on my side. And my third guy is Nolan Patrick of the Philadelphia Flyers. because I've done a few interviews with him, and if he weren't a hockey player, he said he would be a guide at a hunting camp in northern Manitoba. That's what he would do for a living. He's totally and completely at ease in the wild. Shot his first deer when he was 12 years old, and he spears fish. He spears his own fish. Like, he spears. It's like when he goes out fishing in the summer, he doesn't like sit in the boat and cast a rod out or go trolling. He takes a spear with him and he spears the fish.
That's badass.
Yeah, so anyway, so I think he'd be pretty good to have.
All right. So for mine, I start off with Zdeno Chara. Because obviously we're playing to win here, and if you have one of the most dominant physical specimens sports has ever seen on your side, mm-hmm. still kicking it at this stage in his career, that's just a no-brainer for me.
That fight with Evander Kane, like, he was smiling. Did you see it?
Yeah.
He was smiling during that fight. He was enjoying that fight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to the guy that one-punched Steve Downey, which was the greatest moment in the history of hockey. Let's not forget Steve Downey getting one-punched.
All I remember
was Matt Cook.
Zdeno Chara in the playoffs 1 year, or not in the playoffs, but against Toronto 1 year. He took Brian McCabe, who was pretty big, strong guy himself. Yeah. And he just took him by the back of his sweater and just ragdolled him, like went back and forth with him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, he one-punched Matt Cook.
Okay.
That's right. That was the greatest moment in the history of sports. So, Charles, my first. My second is Drew Doughty for a couple of reasons. One, also a gifted physical athlete. So much so that I remember there's a story, I believe you did it, Matt, where the Kings said, like, Drew, we know you don't have to put in extra practice or extra time in the weight room, but can you do it so the young guys realize that they have to do it
because
they're not Drew Doughty? And of course he did it. But also because everybody loves Drew Doughty.
Yep.
He's just a fun dude to hang out with. He'll keep things light, much like your Subban thing. Now my third one, originally when I looked at the question, I thought it was like who would be the best on Survivor? And I thought Brad Marchand would be perfect.
Ooh.
But then I realized it's for my team, and I don't know how, you know, like, he might want to kick me off, and so I don't want any part of that. So I'm going with Victor Hedman instead. Again, you get the physicality. Both him and Chara, I mean, we don't even need ladders. We can put up a whole
structure.
You can
grab coconuts out of trees.
Grab coconuts, mangoes, whatever high-hanging fruit there might be. But also Victor Hedman, like most Swedes, has lived on his own since he was like 15 years old.
That's good. Yeah.
So we know he knows how to.
And he flies planes too.
There you go.
Yes.
And he's such a nice guy that if you said, Victor, you gotta leave, he'd go, okay. And he'd just go.
Yeah. So I don't foresee us losing any of the challenges. So we would get all the riches, and we would also win at basketball.
Good. Good answers. Ken, extra point for making it topical with Ted Lindsay, who passed the morning that we recorded.
Sadly,
this podcast.
93 years old.
That's right. Yep. And also, -1 points to me, the supposed Survivor fan, I think I misunderstood the question. How ironic is that? I just was thinking of like desert island survival, and I forgot about strategy. What kind of Survivor fan am I? It's pathetic.
I don't even watch the stupid show.
I'm a loser.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next question, and this is going to be a nice little pet to Ken's ego. Hans from Holland says, Ken, I love what you're doing. Much appreciated. Hope to enjoy you a long time.
That part of it I didn't get. Does he know something I don't?
And this one's for you. Sincerely, Ken's wife. You often defend the new NHL and are totally opposed to the goons of yesteryear.
Right.
How do you feel about people who say that it's killing the game? Are they dinosaurs who must be ignored?
You know what, Hans? Thank you for the question and thank you for the support. I appreciate it. I'm kind of feeling a bit scared about the "I hope to enjoy you for a long time" part because I'm not sure if he knows something I don't. But I don't think they're dinosaurs who should be ignored. I think the people who want to see fighting staying in the game and a lot of physicality. I love physicality. Like, don't get me wrong, I love a big hit more than anybody else. I just don't like stupid hits. But I think the people who are on the other side of this argument, you know, they're good-meaning people. They're smart people. You know, they've been around the game for a long time. I would never sit there and say to someone like Brian Burke, you know, your opinion means nothing. Because it does. It's all part of the debate.
It does mean something.
Yeah, it absolutely means something. And it's all part of the debate. And you know, there's going to be give and take here. And I really appreciate the other side. I don't agree with the other side, but I appreciate their points, and I can see where they're coming from. They want what's best for the game, too. Everybody who's talking about this stuff, like, down deep down, they want what's best for the game, and they truly believe that this is what's best for the game. So, like, I'm free to disagree with them, and I always will, but I certainly appreciate their opinions.
And I think something that is pretty clear at this point is that, you know, staged fights are basically gone from the NHL. And, you know, for people who are pro fighting, and, you know, I consider myself in that, but I'm not militant about it. You know, even people that are pro fighting, the argument is it helps police the game. You don't get as much dirty stuff and stick work. And stage fighting doesn't really have anything to do with that.
Right.
When you have organic fights, like, right, you know, we were talking before the podcast about Zdeno Chara and Evander Kane the other night, which was quite one-sided. Not for Evander Kane this time. Yeah. It was not like fighting Matt Cook. But that came out of Chara, you know, laying a high hit on Kane that he objected to. And he actually answered the bell himself because Evander Kane loves to fight when, right, it's appropriate. I think that's where we're at right now, is you don't see as much fighting. And when you do, it tends to be very directional versus just, I'm the goon, you're the goon, we gotta go because otherwise we're just...
Yeah, because usually you're not finding a dance partner because the other team doesn't have one half the time.
Yeah.
But what I want to know and what I want to see is, I keep hearing people saying that the game's dirtier and there's more stick work and everything. I want to see the proof of that.
Yeah, I think that's anecdotal. I want to
see the proof of that. That's anecdotal. I want to see, you know, there's been some nasty... Like, I've been watching hockey since the 70s. And there's been some nasty, nasty stick work, every bit as dirty and awful as you see right now. And right now, you know, when Adam Lowry swings a stick back like that, everybody sees it 2 seconds after it happens, right? Mm-hmm. There was stuff that went on, like, they didn't even use the televised games. There was stuff that went on in the 70s that would make...
Yeah, and before that, guys getting their skulls fractured, sticks to the face, Brashear. And it's funny, I'm typically characterized as closer to anti-fighting, and sometimes people will say, well, why don't you just take the punching out of boxing? But I always say, well, the goal of boxing is to punch.
Right.
The goal of hockey is to score.
Right.
So I never like that analogy, but it's funny, I do have a kind of a funny Evander Kane story. Because I went and met with him last year, and so I did ask him. I said, I know it's an obvious question, but I want to confirm, you know, the name Evander, is he named after Evander Holyfield? He says, yes, I am, and he did train boxing. His dad was a huge boxing fan, but he didn't know, like, I went and did the research on hockeyfights.com, and he hadn't lost a fight in like 5 years, and I told him. He was like, really? I haven't lost a fight in 5 years? That's cool, man.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. It sounds like I'm glorifying it now, but... if I had my choice, I still prefer that it doesn't happen, but it's still, as long as it's part of the game, I still think it's fair for us to cover it when it does
Absolutely.
Happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're still fighting, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. next question is from Michael Molyneux. And Michael, to me, this is a pretty slam dunk answer, I think, for all of us. But
completely.
This might be a quick one, but do you think Jerome McGinley will be inducted into the Hall of Fame? Why not? I think he's a slam dunk, easy peasy, first ballot.
Yeah.
He's got two Rocket Richards, or one and a half Rocket Richards. He's got a Pearson, which is most outstanding. In some ways, you could argue it's more valuable than a Hart, because voted by the players.
Yeah.
He came within one goal of a Stanley Cup. He's got Olympic gold, multiple Olympic golds.
And he would have actually won the Hart Trophy the year Jose Theodore won it.
Yeah.
Because the person, one of the guys who voted for Jose Theodore first, which is fine, didn't even have a Ginla on his ballot. So even if he had gotten the closest voting in history, and even if he had had him second or third, which, come on, like, he should have.
Yeah, 52 goals.
He would have won. I mean, he's also got two gold medals. Two Olympic gold medals. He doesn't have the Stanley Cup. But yeah, this is a slam dunk. I mean, he's got 1,300 points, 625 goals. But just as importantly, part of the Hall of Fame, I think, is about bringing distinction and integrity to the game.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that you can find five players in history that have brought more distinction and integrity to the game than Jerome McGinley did.
Yeah.
Like, that guy never had a bad day in his life,
right,
never treated anybody off the ice badly.
Right.
Treat a lot of people on the ice badly.
Yeah.
But, complete slam dunk in my opinion.
And I think just a simple question you have to ask about Hall of Famers was, were they one of the best players of their era? And with the Ginla, It's like, yeah. When it comes to that sort of dead puck era and sort of post-dead puck era, it's like, yeah, he was one of the best.
There was a time when he was right up there in goals among active players.
Oh, yeah.
Like at the height of his career, yeah.
And you know what's kind of interesting to me? Because they interviewed him, obviously, Saturday night. And, you know, a lot of players, once they stop playing, you know, they can put on a bit of weight because they're not in that hockey track anymore. Iginla looks skinnier than when he was a player. Like, he actually looks like he's, like, in better shape than he was when he was playing.
Like Michael Strahan, same thing in football.
Yeah, I guess so.
Interesting. Yeah, to me, I always, this is the same reason why I'm not a huge fan of the idea of, like, a Patrick Marleau type or even a Daniel Alfredson in the Hall of Fame. It's, were you one of the best, were you a top five player at your position for a period of 5 years or more? That's my, like, unofficial rule. Which is why I loved Lindros and Burry getting in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And Iginla, absolutely. He was, like, the preeminent right winger in hockey. Before Ovi came in, I know Ovi was mainly a left winger as well, but if we're talking just pure shooters and goal scorers, like, before Ovi, and Kovalchuk was rising up too, but he was young, but it was in those early, like, early 2000s, it was Iginla's world. He was the premier power forward in the NHL, and I think that you can make a case that was true for several years.
And there's guys that are great, and there's guys that are great and scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's scary.
Right.
Jerome Iginla is scary.
Oh, yeah.
Like Alex Ovechkin scares you because he can create so much offense and all that sort of stuff. But Jerome Iginla is scary because you want to get into it. You want to get into a skill game and play. You know, score against one another. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
You want to get down and dirty? Sure.
Yeah, yeah. You want to punch each other?
Yeah.
I'm down.
You want to play this game down in the alley? Yeah, I'll go down there with you. No problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And dominate you.
Yeah. So true. So it's pretty unanimous, as I expected. So we'll move on to the next one. It's from Jeff Putnam, and Jeff says, "Which team in the West do you think will be the sneaky dark horse in the playoffs?" And it's funny, my answer, I would have felt really confident about it a week ago. Now I'm a little bit nervous about it. St. Louis?
Right, yeah.
I still think, to me, they're a team, what I define a dark horse as a team that when you're a high seed, you roll your eyes, you're like, oh, come on, this is my reward for finishing high, I got to play these guys. Mm. And I feel like whoever draws St. Louis is going to have that eye roll.
If Winnipeg
has to get St. Louis, like a team with Jordan Binnington playing the way he has, that could steal a series. They still have Pietrangelo Parayko. They can play in the alley. Tarasenko has really found his game. I mean, they're deep. On paper, we like them to start the season, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Winnipeg or if St. Louis stays in the three spot and Nashville has to play them, somebody's going to draw St. Louis and be annoyed by it because they're not going to be an easy out. So that's my pick.
I'm gonna go along the same vein, and I mean they've got to get in first, but Minnesota for me.
Mm-hmm.
They lost in overtime and they had won five in a row before that, and I think it's just a team that, you know, every year they under Bruce Boudreau they seem to get 100 points and then they do nothing in the playoffs. Well, this year maybe it's a little different. Maybe they're going to squeak in and then make some noise. I think the pressure's off them. They made those trades. They're just kind of playing, you know, loose and you know, obviously playing pretty well, at least up to their potential. They should have been a playoff team all the time. They should be better than they are, and I just think that they're a team that, you know, maybe they're lurking in the weeds a little bit.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I
think St. Louis is pretty good. I'll say Dallas as well. I'll throw out Dallas just because
all central teams.
Yeah, well, because the Pacific is a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
You know, you just look at the high-end elements they have. And again, you know, much like Minnesota, it's like they're still on the cusp. They may or may not get in. But, you know, Ben Bishop in net, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, you know, I like some of their littler deadline moves, you know, getting a guy like Ben Lovejoy. You know, and then Matt Zuccarello will be back by then, and I'm sure he'll be champing at the bit to contribute since breaking his hand in that first game there. But I would be wary of Dallas because, you know, I feel they could jump on top of a team and they I don't think they can make a long run, but I think they could at least surprise in the first round.
Fair. And double points for Ryan for saying champing at the bit and not chomping.
Chomping, champing, sure. That's
and,
right.
And you said he said wary and not weary, so double points to Ryan. I don't know why I'm deciding to hand out points this podcast, but it's just a thing. I've decided. What? It's a thing. Oh, and you know what?
You're losing right now.
I'm losing. Minnesota's a weird one because I've been bearish on them for a while, but maybe karma's going to reward them for finally understanding who they are, which is a team that's stuck in the middle. They made the playoffs 6 years in a row, never been out of round two, out in round one four of those times. So by accepting that and not worrying about the playoffs and, you know, trading for Ryan Donato, they could end up in the playoffs and better. Who knows, right? Next question from Austin Gagne. Austin says, which players, based on this season, are primed for a breakout next year, 2019-20? And he throws in, love the podcast. Thank you, Austin.
Thanks, Austin.
Appreciate it, bro. So, Kenny, you start this one.
Okay, I'm going to stay with Minnesota, and I'm going to go with Jordan Greenway. 6'6", 227. He's got 11 goals this year, and that's, you know, he's not lighting the world on fire, but he's only getting about 13 minutes of ice time. The thing I worry about Jordan Greenway is, does he get around the ice quickly enough? And is that going to hurt him? But here's a guy who I think really, you know, once he gets a little more comfortable in the league, once the coach starts to trust him a little more and moves him up the lineup, gives him a little more ice time, you know, I mean, I could see a guy that's a, you know, a 25 to 30 goal scorer in this league. I don't know if it's going to happen next year. Maybe in 2 years his breakout will be, but I would be looking for a guy like that with his size and his ability and, you know, his the potential he can have to impact the game, to be a guy that will really, you know, sort of leap to mind in the next little while.
One of my favorite World Junior quotes was from Team USA coach Bob Motzko. When I asked him about Jordan Greenway, what he meant to that team that ended up winning the gold medal in Montreal, he said, "He's Big Papa Bear. He makes everybody else feel safe out there." I thought that was really great. And he's a super nice kid off the ice, so that's good too. For me, I'm looking at Henrik Borgstrom from Florida. They call him the artist. And I think he's primed to make that jump. You know, he's dominated in the AHL this year. He's done pretty decent in the NHL when he's been up with the Panthers.
He's done okay.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this Florida team is one where I know we've been saying this for a couple of years now, but like they're primed to make another step next year. I say primed. I'm not saying they're
just... They've got those kids.
But they're at the point now, Ryan, where it's like, no, they're not, because they haven't done it.
right.
And I'm not going to believe it until it happens. Yeah. And I can't even figure out why they're so shitty.
Yeah.
I can't even figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know either, but with a healthy Vince Trocheck and, you know, Barkov continuing to be Barkov, I think Borgstrom has a nice place to fit in that lineup where, you know, obviously he doesn't have to do everything. He can use those great offensive skills he has to create and produce, and I think he's on the right track.
Fair. And Florida, I mean, on paper, they've got some kids coming at forward. Owen Tippin, Lexi Heppenyemi, and Grigory Denisenko, and Borgstrom, but he's ready. Like, they're stacked on paper, but there's always that team. It's funny, there was the source is anonymous, but for a story I was working on, an executive from a team was saying that sometimes you get these teams that on paper they always look good, but they get into this trap where they have too many young players coming up at the same time, peaking at the same time, and pushing out so many older players that there's not enough leadership. So the guy put it, he said they suck and they keep sucking, and the older guys, the only guys they can bring in that they can afford to fit in, those guys suck, the older guys suck, and it becomes like a disease, and then you start going through coaches. It was good, a fair analysis.
I mean, other than Roberto Luongo, you know, who's there to show the way? You know, Troy Brouwer?
Yeah, I guess.
But, yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that. You need guys around that can show these guys how to be good young players.
Bro.
But to me, Florida is where Washington was in the past for me. Not by the same level of expectation, but I kept believing Washington was never going to win the Cup.
Yeah.
Until they won it, I was going to refuse to believe that they would ever win. And now they've done it. So maybe Florida will at some point too. Maybe they'll actually, you know, maybe like make the playoffs. Like maybe finish. Maybe like finish third in their division one of these days. Like something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Maybe draw more than 18 people to their games. Oh, did I say that?
Burn. I'm gonna just basically play a clip of myself talking a year ago for my breakout pick, which is Jack Roslovic. I'm picking him for the same reason, essentially, because last year the Jets, They had Paul Stastny leaving, as probably leaving as a UFA, who was a rental. It was going to open up competition for the second-line center job. Rostov, extremely fast and great young kid, smart kid, great prospect and top six forward ability. And this year, you've got Kevin Hayes, who I don't think the Jets will be able to keep because they've got Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, and Jacob Trouba to re-sign as RFA. So it's going to be a very complicated summer yet again for Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Trouba will be easy because he's got arbitration, though.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, but again, just those other three alone, it's going to make a major headache. Yep. I can't see how Hayes would fit in financially to that team. So again, it's either going to be Brian Little getting his number two job back or somebody else ascending. And I know Jack Roslovic has played a lot of wing this year, but the long-term goal ideally is still for him to be a number two center. And I think he has the ability. He's shown it in flashes. Consistency's not there yet, but I think it will be. And next year, I think, is the year we see Jack Roslovic become a 25-goal, 50-point center in the NHL. That's my pick.
That's a good one. And I just followed the Winnipeg Jets around for an issue recently, and Paul Maurice could not say enough good things about Jack Roslovic. In fact, he replaced Patrick Laine with Roslovic on the first power play unit. That was quite the cause celeb. And I would have liked to have seen Roslovic maybe do a little more with that opportunity, but he didn't. And another guy that actually just came to mind for me is Brendan Lemieux. And now he's a guy that will have the opportunity because he's really started to come on this year.
True.
And he'll be on a team where somebody's got to get the points, right? They've got to fill those spots with some guys, so maybe he's a guy. But Roslovic's a good one, too.
That's right, because the Rangers, they're not going to be populating their team with too many more veterans, and that's a story that I've done for upcoming issue of Future Watch. I talked to Jeff Gorton, and I talked to their head scout, Gordy Clark, and a lot of people around the organization just about how they've finally committed to the rebuild. And even the conversation they had when they made that letter, when they sort of looked around the room, Jeff Gorton and Glenn Sather and the owner, James Dolan, and they said, are we good enough? And the company kind of looked and said, no, we know it. We know in our hearts that we're stuck in the middle. So that's why they've sort of made this commitment. And I think the biggest sign of maturity is in the off season. And I said, you know, you guys always felt the pressure of being that team that always spends money. And the year before it was Kevin Shattenkirk. This offseason, 2018 offseason, they didn't spend the big money because they're keeping the spots open for the kids, which means a guy like Brendan Lemieux is going to get a shot. And then, of course, guys like Vitaly Kravtsov and Lace Anderson and Phil Kittle. Kittle, I can never say it right.
Kittle.
That was the closest I've come so far. next question is from just Rob. I like to copy
Rob.
I'm Rob. Madonna, Maradona, and Rob. Rob says, Chuck Fletcher was brought in to usher more urgent change in Philadelphia, but so far has only made minor moves. What do the Flyers do this upcoming offseason? And first of all, I think the minor moves is a good sign because it shows a commitment to doing things right and not panicking.
Yeah.
The Flyers aren't going to make the playoffs, so there's no reason to get crazy before the deadline, but I'll let you guys have the floor first on this one.
Well, first of all, hire Joel Quenneville.
I've been saying it all along. Big market coach.
That'll work. I'm wondering if they're not at the stage. I mean, not to give away any trade secrets here, but they're going to be very highly ranked in our upcoming Future Watch edition. And I'm wondering if they're not at the stage where, you know, where maybe Vegas has been. You know, I mean, you see what George McPhee did. Had three first-round picks in 2017. Only one of them is still there in Cody Glass. He's traded Brännström, and he's traded Nick Suzuki, and he's turned that into Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone, right? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that's not where the Flyers need to go. They got a ton of cap space. So do they, you know, do they deal one of these young guys like Meyer, Jean-Philippe Myers?
Philippe
Myers. Yeah. Or a Farabee or, you know, a guy like that to get. I'm thinking of a guy like, I think Jacob Trouba is going to be gone in Winnipeg. You talked about him just now. I think he's gone. I think ultimately he doesn't want to play in Winnipeg anymore, and he's pretty much made up his mind that that's going to be the case. He's got 1 year left. He's coming up to the end of his restricted deal, and they can take him to arbitration, and he'll get one more year. So they'll have him under contract for one more year. But I think now is the time to deal him and at the draft. So I wonder if it wouldn't be a good idea to maybe give up some of that youth to get a guy like that or to sign a big name free agent in the offseason. Mm. You know, because they've got a ton of cap space.
How close is Philly to a major body of water?
Very close.
Very close.
Very close.
Artemi Panarin, baby.
Yeah. For my thinking, I look at maybe a Jimmy Howard in the summer. You know, Carter Hart has obviously you know, come in, shown what all the hype was about, and but you don't want to put too much pressure on him right now because he is still super young for a goaltender, even though he has that pedigree. I would like them to bring in a guy like a Jimmy Howard who can do enough starts, can be that 1B guy for you, but he's not like a long-term existential threat for Carter Hart. It's sort of like, I am here to mentor you. I will get paid nicely for doing so, and I will still get, you know, 35, 40 games in this first season. Because otherwise, I see a lot of good internal growth with this team. I mean, they've got the veterans and the scoring with Claude Giroux, you know, Sean Couturier, Jakub Voracek. They've got young guys, some of whom are already there. Nolan Patrick, Travis Konecny. On the back end, you got Shane Gostisbehere, and you have Ivan Provorov. And, you know, I mean, both of them can still get better, and I think they have to be better for Philly to take that next step. But at least you've got them, and you know they have that potential. So I don't think they're too far off being something very viable. But it's just those little tweaks that they need to kind of safeguard. And I think, you know, having a veteran 1B goaltender, where whether it's Howard, whether it's somebody like Semyon Varlamov, you know, there's going to be a couple of guys on the open market potentially this summer. I think that's kind of the big need.
That's fair.
Yeah, you need a guy. You need a guy who's not a question mark. Mm-hmm. Like, you need a guy who you know can come in and can spell off Carter Hart.
Yeah.
In case, you know, in case Carter falters or whatever, right? You need someone who can play that sort of dual role of being the guy who ushers him along and sort of helps him out, but can also step in and play 10 games in a row if he has to.
Right.
And win seven of them, you know?
For sure. Yeah, that's fair. And I look at a team like Dallas, and I think a problem that Dallas has run into in recent years is having so many good young defensemen, but the veteran support they had wasn't high-end enough to really help mentor and boost those kids. And I think Philly has the same problem, where your elder statesman is Andrew McDonald, but all due respect to Andrew McDonald, he ain't winning no Norrises anytime soon.
Right.
So I would like to see, and whether it's a Trouba or someone else, but Philly bring in another veteran presence who's more in his prime or close to his prime and is still pretty effective.
Yeah.
Only problem being it's such a weak free agent class for defensemen. Like, your best option, I mean, unless you go for Erik Karlsson.
That's what I mean.
You never know.
But I had that written down here. Do they make a pitch for Erik Karlsson?
Yeah.
Do they use the 5 days to before the free agency period to just you know, woo him into signing with them?
Maybe.
You know?
I think, because other than that, there's a huge drop off. It goes from Erik Karlsson to maybe Jake Gardner, but I don't think Philly needs as much help on the left side. And then the other types would have been like a Nicholas Jensen, but now he's been signed by the Capitals, right? Yeah. So it may have to be the trade route unless you take an aggressive run at Karlsson, which would be interesting, right? Next question is from Thomas Saunders. Thomas says, in a recent player survey by The Athletic, Alexander Barkov was voted by his peers as the most underrated player in the league. Couldn't agree more. He's awesome. Who are some other players in the NHL who perhaps deserve a little more spotlight? And I'm going to go with the guy right below Barkov on the depth chart, Vincent Trocheck. And I think it's because, so this is almost the case that Barkov isn't that underrated, because it's Trocheck is overshadowed by Barkov.
Right.
And I think Trocheck does a lot of the same things well. He's got tremendous natural offensive talent, but he's good at both ends of the ice. He kills penalties. He can play big minutes. He can even play pretty physically for a guy who's not a giant out there by any stretch of the, or by any, what's the
expression? Stretch of the imagination.
Stretch of the imagination. Yeah. Thank you very much. He's great on faceoffs.
I get another point for that, right?
Yeah, another point to Ken. Yeah. Great faceoff guy. I just think Trocheck does so many little things well, on top of being a legitimate 70-point caliber second-line center, and I don't think anybody talks about Vincent Trocheck, partially because he's been hurt, of course, but such a good player, in my opinion, and not appreciated as much as he should be.
Yeah, I'm with this whole underrated thing, I'm starting to, you know, I don't think Alexander Barkov is underrated anymore. I think he's one of those guys that everybody talks about him being so underrated that he's on the verge of being overrated.
He's just rated.
That's how underrated he is.
Like Mark Stone, he's rated now.
And now, rated. And so live up to the rating. Be healthy. Get in the playoffs. You know, do one of those things, and then maybe let's talk. But anyways, I don't think he's underrated anymore. My guy for being underrated is Cam Atkinson. And I'll tell you why. He scores big goals. To me, game-winning goals means nothing. The game-winning goal stats means nothing in the NHL. To me, it's more important the goal that puts the team ahead in the game to stay should be the game-winning goal. Guess who has the most of those in the NHL? Cam Atkinson and Nikita Kucherov with 10 each.
Wow. Yeah.
And in terms of goals that have put his team ahead in the game, Cam Atkinson has 15 and Alexander Ovechkin is the only guy who has more at 17.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So to me, and nobody ever talks about this guy, but like all he does is get like point goals and big goals.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's a good one. For me, I look at Jason Zucker with Minnesota. I mean, talk about a guy who's tailor-made for today's game. He's got the fantastic wheels, and he uses those wheels at both ends of the ice. And I think that's what I like about Zucker is that he's always involved in the play. And, you know, Minnesota, even though it's a big cradle of hockey, like, it's kind of an anonymous NHL market in a lot of ways. And for that reason, I think Zucker probably doesn't get as much publicity as he would if he played in New York or if he played in, you know, Boston or whatever. But, I mean, he can score your goals. He can do a lot of different things out there. And I think he's just a very valuable guy.
I always think of, like, you know what's – you always think of what's wrong with the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
And – not enough guys like Jason Zucker.
Like Hustas, right. Who could score. Yeah, and Zucker plays like his regular line when he was with Koivu and Granlin. They were out against the other team's best line every night.
Yeah, like I always think of him as like, if the Edmonton Oilers could get him, maybe they would start being on the right track. A guy, him or a guy like him.
Right. Yeah, or you Cam Atkinson.
Yeah, or him too, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Good points. Next question is from just, this person's known as Gliz. Who knows what Gliz means? It sounds a little gross, if I'm being honest. Gliz says, do the Islanders...
It's G-Liz.
It's G-Liz.
G-Liz.
G-Liz. Right. Do the Islanders stay in first place in the Metro come season's end? Well, it wouldn't be stay because they're out of first now, but right. I understand the point. Seems they have both unsustainably high shooting and save percentages, coupled with the old chip on their shoulder, but I feel most would see them as an underdog in any first-round matchup. Tough question.
The thing
about the shooting percentages, and I said this about the Islanders near the beginning of the season, is, you know, we're three quarters of the way through. So the things like PDO, if you're this far along, they're not necessarily going to correct themselves this year. Like, it might just be one of those years where, kind of like the Colorado Avalanche in 2013-14 or the Ottawa Senators in 2017, there's going to be a team that outplays its peripherals. Every season there's one of these teams. Mm. Maybe it's the Islanders. But the best way to mask bad peripherals has always been good goaltending. And that's one where, I don't know, I have faith in the goaltending because of the mastermind behind it, and it's Mitch Korn. And wherever Mitch Korn goes, it just seems to have an impact on his goalies. And he's the person behind Dominic Hasek and Pekka Rinne and Braden Holtby. And again, Pekka Rinne, it's not like Pekka Rinne was a first-round pick expected to be a phenom. Pekka Rinne was a seventh-round pick, if I remember correctly.
Eighth-round
pick.
Yeah. The round no longer exists.
He was picked
so late, you're not even allowed to pick that late anymore.
Whereas Robin Lehner was a very high-end prospect. He was supposed to be a phenom, right, coming up with Ottawa. So that's some good clay to mold. So I'm a believer, and the fact that you're seeing it from Greiss and Lehner, I think it's even more of a testament to the work that the coaching staff has done, the fact that it's impacted both goaltenders so much. So I'm a believer that between the two, they're going to get enough goaltending to keep masking any problems with the metrics.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was thinking the same thing. I was actually writing a piece about the Islanders on the website last week that as good as Robin Lehner has been, Thomas Greiss's stats are almost exactly the same, right down to the fact they both have four shutouts. And I think it's just Barry Trotz working that structural magic for that team, where I think that's what makes them dangerous, at least in the first round of the playoffs, is that they've got their house in order. Like, they know their marching orders. They've all bought in to what Trotz is selling. And they might not have the highest-end talents in the world, although Matt Barzal, I think, would qualify. But they play as a team, and that can take you places.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, are they going to either be or stay in first place? Probably not. They haven't been very good lately.
No.
They haven't been very good at all lately. Like, the dominating win over Toronto last week, notwithstanding, they've been really uneven. I think a lot of their big guns have been pretty silent lately. You know, Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Josh Bailey, Matt Barzell. Those guys haven't been putting, you know, I mean, Casey Cizikas is the guy doing all the scoring for them lately. The guy's got 17 or 18 goals.
It's wild.
Yeah. But, yeah, I see a team that's sort of trending the wrong way right now. So I don't think they're going to be in first place. I completely agree with G Liz's assessment that they are going to be an underdog no matter what series they go into. Like I kept thinking, you know, like if you're Montreal, okay, if the Islanders were to win the Metropolitan Division, so if you're Montreal, what would you rather do? Would you rather bust your ass to get into third place and play either Toronto or Boston, or would you rather be in the first wild card spot and play the Islanders? I don't think there's anybody in hockey that would say I'd rather play Toronto or Boston in the first round than the Islanders.
For sure.
I think you're gonna want to play the Islanders and take your chances with them.
I think the Islanders' status to me is going to depend a lot on that draw, right? So if you do win the Metro and you get to play a Montreal, then hey, Islanders are probably going to be favored in that series. But if you draw Pittsburgh, right? Let's say Pittsburgh drops down to the seventh spot and the Islanders win the Metro, then Islanders aren't going to be favored in that series.
Right.
I think the best case scenario could end up being the Islanders dropping into the two spot and playing like Columbus, a team that
Carolina is
really hard to figure out. Yeah, Carolina with their goaltending, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there are certain scenarios in which the Islanders could be the favorite, but they're not going to be a favorite if they draw Tampa Bay, of course. But ooh, what a bold statement. Another negative point to me. Man, I suck. What a loser.
Matt wins the green jacket.
Yeah. As an aside, just talking about Mitch Korn, if anybody's listening and is involved in hockey journalism in any way, just find any excuse to interview Mitch Korn. The guy is an absolute maniac in the best possible way. He's just crazy. He'll say anything. Like, I've talked to him before where he kept me on the phone because he was driving to Cincinnati and he wanted company. He's like, let's just keep going. Like, he has a theory that like all goals should be allowed and you should be allowed to kick pucks into the net.
That's a good one.
Like, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
You should be able to high stick him in the net, too.
Like, that's what he said. He's like, why not?
Why not?
If nobody's getting hurt.
It went off your stick.
Yeah.
Went off your stick.
Yeah. He's
says the guy who has a full mascot.
Yeah. We're going to finish it off with a Ryan Kennedy specific question from Adam Fletch.
That's a beauty.
It's a good one.
Which of the Detroit Red Wings picks in the 2018 draft was the bigger steal? Joe Valeno or which McIsaac? Jared McIsaac? Yeah, Jared McIsaac.
Now, I'm going to say Valeno because they got him late in the first round. He easily could have gone higher. You know, a lot of his season last year, he was putting a lot of pressure on himself in St. John. Then he got traded to Drummondville, and he has been one of the best players in the whole league this year, going with Drummondville the whole time. I just think that with his speed game, the pace he plays, you know, he's developing into a great 200-foot player. I think he's going to be crucial to Canada's World Junior team next year. And the fact that they got him with a late first rounder versus getting him with, you know, like a top 10 pick, that's great. McIsaac, I think we had him as an early second rounder in Future Watch. So he was kind of properly rated where they got him. And ironically, I think he'll be, sorry, not ironically, coincidentally, I think he'll be very important to Canada's World Junior team next year as well, because he'll be one of the few returning players from that squad this year. So he'll bring that experience and that great two-way game. But I feel like Detroit got him where they should have, whereas with Valeno, he probably should have gone higher just based on his pedigree.
All right. Well, thank you, Ryan, and thank you for listening. Thanks for all the questions, everybody, and hopefully I'll start remembering to look at the email questions as well going forward, and hopefully we'll have some amazing new sound quality next podcast. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say we're going to do it, so now you have to hold me to it, universe. Thanks for listening, everybody.